Good Wednesday afternoon and welcome into Grant and Danny on January 7th, 2026. You are listening live to The Fan, and we are in the Navy Yard in D.C. at our Half Street Studios. Thank you for making the show part of your day. At 3 o'clock in 1 hour, David Aldridge of The Athletic. What should the Commanders do with their offensive coordinating opening? And how should they put Jaden Daniels in the best position to thrive moving forward? We'll talk to DA about that in 1 hour. 4 o'clock today, head of the Beltway Blitz. We will be giving away Caps tickets. The Caps are back in action tonight. Danny, believe it or not, it has been almost 5 weeks since the Capitals won back-to-back games. They have a chance to do that this evening with the Dallas Stars in town. Second night of a back-to-back for Dallas. Caps rested after being idle last night. Good chance to get 2 points and try to string two together.
Yeah, it feels like it's been that long, honestly. Just one step forward, a couple steps back, a couple nasty losing streaks in there where they didn't play particularly well. They could use one of those good stretches. I mean, they're basically dining out still on that stretch where they won 10 of 12. Outside of that, they've been below 500 when you count in some of those overtime losses. So they could use some what I've come to be known as some sustained good play. That would be nice.
I cannot believe how different things are in Ashburn than they were a year ago.
Yeah, and the words of Al Michaels. Here we go.
You live long enough.
Yeah.
You get right back to where you started.
Time is a flat circle.
It is wild just how familiar this all feels. But a calendar year ago, not even, Washington was about to play Tampa Bay in the playoffs. We were about to be treated to a rare and fun playoff win on the road, Raymond James Stadium. Then they went to Detroit, got the biggest win this franchise has experienced since January of 1992. And then it was on to the NFC Championship game. And really, since that week leading up to the NFC title game, where they would give up 55, get blown out by the Eagles, everything has come crashing back down to earth. But today, an ominous report from Jordan Schultz, formerly of Fox Sports, has bounced around different outlets. Jordan Schultz, super plugged in with agents, that's kind of his game. Sources, part of the issue the Commanders have had in the building is the front office meddling with the coaching staff on personnel and players to use, an ongoing problem dating back to 2024 when they were having success. With the team struggling this year, it reached new heights, and there were notable disagreements. Moreover, I have not gotten the impression Dan Quinn wanted to move on from his coordinators. The entire disconnect is one to watch as we head into 2026. And then Jordan Schultz quotes a source who said, there's a lot of S going on there, end quote. We back up.
Yeah, let the world know.
We are back, baby. The Commanders, the Redskins, what's different? Let's just start with this report.
Yes.
What do you think?
I wonder what else Cliff Kingsbury's agent had to say. I'm sort of being tongue-in-cheek sarcastic, but this is clearly, we have done this before. We skipped to the end here in this marketplace. We know. You don't have to start, you don't have to be Columbo. You don't have to be Ace Ventura pet detective to get to the bottom of this one. When things go bad and people start losing gigs, blame starts flying and people start doing a little CYA. And you do the CYA to try to make sure that your next job or your next interview can go okay when you need people to know that, no, I know it was bad, but it wasn't my fault. Here's why. So you use what mechanisms you have. You flush some things down. And you hope they come out on the other side of the pipes to make people, be more on your side, to get your narrative and get your story out there. You don't need to do that when you're 12-5 and it's a honeymoon. You do when you're 4-12 and you win a meaningless game to end the season. So I buy it 100%. I buy that there's trouble in paradise. I buy that discord should have happened, quite frankly. And, the idea that it erupted and spilled over and was a point of contention, yeah, I understand that. Now, I'm not condoning it. I don't think the GM should be walking down and sticking a finger in someone's face and going, hey, on 2nd and 7, make sure that you throw a screen pass to Ben Sinnott. Or where's Jalen Lane on my pop pass? That shouldn't be happening. That's not what you do. You pick the ingredients. You manage the edges as the general manager. But game day, the plan they're in, that belongs to the coach. That's an overstepping, if that is to be believed. And I think to some degree, it probably is. But you're telling me the bad team had discord? Yeah, I buy it.
Second time this week from a second different reporter and outlet where we've heard about consternation between the front office and the staff. So there's more smoke here to that. I think it is clear and it is unequivocal that you can, while not dismissing this, you can understand where it's coming from. You joked about Kingsbury's agent, Eric Burkhart, or one of the other agents that are involved here. Could be the agent for Joe Barry. Joe Barry's not the guy. Joe Witt.
Yeah, him too.
That's another bad defensive coordinator they fired. I've done this for too long.
Yeah.
Could be the agent.
For Greg Minuski.
Exactly. For, Greg Blosch. No, but it could be Joe Witt's agent. It could be Bobby Johnson's agent. It could be, somebody else in the building who we don't know about that is on their way out that was a part of one of these staffs that now knows that their days are numbered and their agent's getting the word out. But that side of the story being disseminated, while I think it's pretty easy to chalk up where it's coming from, does not mean it's wrong. That's an important distinction. In other words, when a couple gets a divorce and you go to the wife who's getting separated and you say, tell me about this guy, the soon-to-be ex-husband, and she unloads the magazine, right? She's just unloading the clip. He's lazy. He doesn't do this. He doesn't do that. He's a bad husband. He's a bad dad, whatever. Like, she's angry. This is coming from a place of emotion. She has been wronged. She feels a little bit miffed and is angry at this person. And so she's saying all of the worst possible things. But there's probably a lot of truth in it, too. You're probably still able to weed through some of that, some of the biases, and say, was this true that they weren't working that hard? Is this true that they cheated on you? Whatever it was, right? So there could be merit to some of this. That's what we have to figure out. That's what the Commanders have to figure out. That's what this ownership group has to figure out. Here is the part of this, though, that I do not buy for one second. This is not to knock Jordan Schultz's reporting. I think he heard something, and he's passing that along. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what reporting is. Generally, you hear from one person, you better corroborate it with another. There's some checks and balances here. But in 2026, the year of our Lord, the way reporting works is essentially people hear something from somebody and then they disseminate it and put that out there, right? And what I'm quite sure he was told by someone was that Dan Quinn didn't want to make these decisions. I don't believe that for one second. I don't think that Adam Peters said to Dan Quinn, you have to fire Cliff Kingsbury, and then Quinn fired a guy that he didn't think he should. I don't think that Dan Quinn, who already made Joe Witt come down to the sideline from the booth, who already took his play calling duties away, who has already cut him off at the knees midway through the season, was unwilling to fire Joe Witt. I don't believe that for one second. So this second part here, I have not gotten the impression Dan Quinn wanted to move on from his coordinators. I do not believe that even a little bit.
Fair. Here's my counter to your counter. I think you say it that way to make sure everyone knows that it wasn't just Cliff's representative talking about it. In other words, if this anonymous source goes, he really didn't want to fire Cliff Kingsbury, everyone's kind of going, dude, you can just sign your name. It's not anonymous anymore. You say he didn't want to move on from his coordinators. I think to throw some the attempt at some subterfuge there, that this could have been anybody. But to me, that's how I viewed that. So it's interesting that you came to that conclusion, because I'm with you. I don't think you had any hesitation. You understood. The assignment was pretty easy. Once you said, Joe Witt, you ain't calling plays anymore, what do you do here?
So you're right? Saying you just label it as everyone so that you protect your source?
Yes.
But my point is, okay, so let's just make it Cliff then, who's really the person we're talking about. The idea that Dan wanted to keep Cliff, that Dan was happy with how Cliff was operating, goes against a lot of the things that I've heard within the last few days when they're having these meetings, and they weren't just in the last 72 hours, but it is very normal for a defensive-minded head coach dinosaur to want to run the ball more.
Yeah.
Run it 10 times, they want you to run it 12. It is very normal when you get shut out by the Vikings that they're upset with your protection plan. Like, I think there was some strife and some consternation. Again, we'll see. And maybe there's no way to ever prove this or not, but both with the information that I've gleaned and then just my eyes watching from the same seats you were in Minnesota and the season sitting at this table here with you, I do not believe that Adam Peters demanded that Dan Quinn fire Cliff Kingsbury and Quinn begrudgingly did so, where he walks into the office and goes, hey, Cliff, look, if this was up to me, buddy, you and I would keep making sweet music together. But the big bad boss is making me do this. I just don't believe that.
Okay. So I'm trying to figure out how I would quantify this. I'm going Rossini report about Peters Kingsbury Discord.
Yes.
The information that you've been able to glean and pass on, and then this source that I believe, and again, I'm not calling anybody out, just my belief that this is basically coming from Kingsbury's camp.
This idea of like meddling GM coordinators at odds, yeah. I believe there's truth to some of this.
Yeah. And so was Dan Quinn a 1 out of 10, 10 out of 10 going, get out of my office, I never want to see your ass again, you'll never work anywhere. He was not a 10 out of 10. They wanted the fire cliff. Was he a 1, though, where it's like, God, I want to keep you so bad, I just can't? I don't think it was that. I think it's on the scale, right? I think it's somewhere towards the middle.
Well, here's the way to ask it.
Yeah.
What percentage of Cliff's departure, if we're divvying up 100% to Peters and to Quinn, would you say, like, is on whose desk?
Yeah.
So, in other words, just to give you my first numbers, and I haven't thought about this. I'm thinking about it in
real time. Because that's what I'm trying to quantify.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, like, 60-40. Dan Quinn, or 65-35 Dan Quinn. I don't think Adam Peters, when you go to him, I don't think you have to sell him and be like, dude, listen. Because I think a lot of how Quinn views the world is what he knows Peters wants anyway. I think that is Peters' guy, and they are in lockstep on a lot of things. Like, you and I do a show together. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, we celebrated our 12th anniversary.
So it's 12 years, but we're in our 13th year, but it's our 12th anniversary. Yes.
12th anniversary.
Yeah.
By the way, if you have anything you'd like to send us for our 12th anniversary, please let us know. We'll get you our addresses, right?
Yeah.
but stick aside.
Yeah.
You start stuff. You kind of start seeing things the same way.
Mm-hmm.
We've done the show long enough. I'll use an axiom that you came up with. You'll use a reference that I like. You just kind of mold
it's
together.
It's like a zipper.
You start seeing things like each other see it, you know? I think that probably happens with them. So I think when Quinn goes to Peters and says, I want to get rid of this guy, it's not like it's news to Adam Peters or he's like, really, you do? I think they've had a lot of conversations. But the bottom line is, did Quinn want to make a change or not? I think the answer is yes. And so I'm going over 50%.
So I flipped the numbers. In other words, I don't think Dan Quinn fought on this one. Like, I don't think he's like, it's either me or him. I don't think he did anything like that. I think this is a Peters thing. I think Dan Quinn is, when it comes to these type things, is the Martin Mayhew. Remember, Martin would stand up there at the press conferences and go, I agree with Coach. Stunning that you agree with Coach. You know what Coach said it. Did he? Ron hit that one? He knocked that one out of the park, too? That answer was perfect? Way to go, Martin. Do you have any independent thoughts of your own on this matter? Yeah, what Coach said. I think that's why Dan Quinn got the gig, to be frank with you. I think Dan Quinn, yes, to a degree, sees things the way Adam Peters does, but he also knows that's in his professional interest to do so. I don't think they wanted a strong-willed head coach. I mean, to me, my prime example on this is not that they didn't end up hiring Mike Vrabel. They didn't interview Mike Vrabel because the reputation is this guy is
or Belichick. Or Belichick.
Yeah. They didn't want somebody that was going to, going to push back.
The Ben Johnson thing, when he was interested in the job, went completely sideways.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of the really strong-willed people, and I know people get upset when we bring this up, but sorry, put your big boy pants on for a second. I mean, Dan Quinn flew in here coach and flew out coach when they're flying all over the country on a PJ to meet with all the other candidates to start that process. Like, yeah, they ended up with a guy, I think, that kind of saw the world the way they wanted him to. There's no doubt about that. Doesn't mean he can't be the right hire. Certainly was in year one.
And that's not necessarily on its face a criticism, by the way. I don't necessarily mind that one way or the other. The person I'd rather have be the strong architect is the GM. I want this whole organization to be in his image. Like, that to me is the tone setter. Coaches come and go, assistants come and go, coordinators, everything underneath it, they'll change. The GM, that I want my Ozzie Newsome. I want to wake up and go, I'm safe. I'm sound. I got that guy.
That's another good point, by the way. How long have we wanted a real GM around here to call all the shots?
Begged for it.
To be the de facto leader. And I don't need it to be Belichickian, my way or the highway, chest out, big time, like ego, no one else has a say. And that's certainly not the way they portray this when they're sitting side by side as this, you know, working relationship. But if you want a GM who is powerful and the buck stops with them, who's more powerful than the coach, and who calls the shots and runs the show, you've got that.
Yes.
And if that means, by the way, that GM is going to go occasionally to a coordinator and say, I drafted a tight end at 52 and you're not playing him because you're playing some other older guy that you have a relationship with from Arizona, I need you to get this kid the football, I don't have a huge problem with that. Now, is it overstepping? Is it abnormal that a GM would go to a coordinator and do that if that's what's happening? Apparently so. This was Jay Gruden, who we had on the show on Monday, after this report broke, and we asked him, is it odd, is it normal for a general manager and a coordinator to basically be butting heads over either scheme or usage of players? Is that something that should be happening?
Well, that's odd to me because typically the GM and the offensive coordinator don't have contact at all. That's the head coach's job to talk to the GM directly and relay the coach's message to him directly. And the coaches don't have really any, you know, interaction with the GM. So it's odd to me. But, you know, I guess if he's not getting the players he wanted and maybe he's expressed his frustration in that way. But it's just a weird situation because, like I said, they don't really typically interact.
So that's the what's typical and how the normal structure would go. That's I understand that to a degree, but like, you know, how serious are these things? In other words, is this a scheduled meeting on the books where Ben Sinnott usage, you know, come by my office at 10:15, we'll have a 45-minute knockdown dragout? Is it in the hallway over a cup of coffee? Hey, Cliff, how's your weekend? Pretty good. Hey, man, why can't Ben get the ball? Is that the meddling? We don't know. I mean, there's layers to this, right? There's nuance to it. So when things don't go well, again, this is expected. I'm not saying it's good. I'm saying you'll find all the warts and all the negative things come flying out. But ultimately, the idea is that Adam Peters is the person that will hopefully, if this all works well, I think this offseason is pivotal for him, by the way. He's going to have to change complete direction in terms of player acquisition, personnel, the type of team he's going to field, et cetera. I know why they doubled down after the success of year one. I think that was supposed to be temporary. You go to the NFC title game, you have to kind of keep doing that. This blew up in their face. It's now get young, get fast time, and hurry up about it, please. Let's start yesterday. So that's where I'll be judging him. But for major matters, I think it's Peters' call, and I think Dan Quinn knows that. I think that was part of one of the conditions of his employment, where I appreciate your opinion. We'll do this by committee, but the buck stops right here, dude. I'm Adam Peters, and you're not.
Yeah, and I don't buy, while we're making a list of things that I'm not completely signing off on, like this idea that Quinn had to fire these coaches and didn't want to. Don't agree with that. Here's another thing I don't buy. When Adam Peters in the press conference on Monday at the end of year presser said something to the effect of, like, the staff is exclusively DQs.
Mm-hmm.
I basically am a spectator, and I just sit it out, and he lets me know what he's doing. They said at other points during the presser over and over again that everything's so collaborative, that nothing happens one without the other. So in every other way, Adam and Dan are in cahoots, and they are, you know, talking things through. But in this one element, this significant, massive element, by the way, the guy that runs the building and runs the shop doesn't care to have a say in who the OC or the DC is going to be. By the way, the quarterback you drafted second overall, in some way, your reputation with that pick, at least initially, not forever, but for right now, is kind of on the line with that selection. That development of that player, you know, Dan Quinn's future, who was your first head coaching hire, this is all on the line with this OC selection.
Yep.
And you're just going to wait in your office for Quinn to tell you who it is? Call me crazy. I don't buy that for 1 second. He's absolutely going to be heavily involved in picking the OC. Now, it's got to be Quinn's call in the end, with some help from Peters, and I'm sure that was the case with the dismissal of these coaches as well. But the fact for me is, if you're sitting here reporting today that the GM's super powerful and meddling and overly involved and was annoying the coaches, number one, that's obviously coming from the coaches who just got fired,
yep,
which doesn't make it not true. Number two, we've got to figure out to what extent was that meddling happening. Is it as simple as him wanting to see Ben Sinnott more, which I did too and you did too?
Yeah.
So I kind of agree with that one. Like, what are we talking about?
And also, I know I'm harping on this detail, and I know maybe it's not relevant to some, but what does meddling look like?
Right.
Is it a conversation in passing? Is it ribbing when, like, you guys are there walking on the treadmill next to each other, sipping electrolyte-filled water, going, yeah, dude, play Ben Sinnott. No! And then we go about our day.
Get Brandon Coleman back in there at left guard, man. Every time you see him, and it just hasn't happened all year, he's insubordinate.
Or is it, you know, finger in the face, do what I'm telling you to do, or your ass is grass. I have no idea.
What do you guys make of this report? We could start with that on the phones at 800-636-1067. And for so many of us, for many, many years, what we wanted was a general manager to run the show here and to call the shots and to be the kind of the end-all be-all, the buck stopping with that guy at their desk. Is there such a thing as overstepping in that role? Is there such a thing as being meddling if you're talking to Kingsbury about what you're looking for? This is multiple reports now in a week. Front office versus staff. Being at odds, perhaps. 800-636-1067. And then lastly, we're trying to divvy up who made the call on the dismissal of Cliff Kingsbury and Joe Witt Jr. Do you think that was Quinn? Do you think that was Peters? to some extent, it's both. But who is the driving force there, do you think? Grant and Danny on the Fan.
I'm really just here to support DQ. The coaching staff is DQ's, and I'm always here to help, like during the season and off season, however I can, you know, to help support him and help him make the decisions that he needs to make, and certainly wherever he needs. So it's not, you know, I'm not involved in whatever decision it is. It's always DQ's call, and I have his back on whatever he wants to do.
We'll talk to David Aldridge in 30 minutes. Columnist with The Athletic and a Hall of Fame broadcaster. What should the Commanders do with their OC opening? 4 o'clock, we're giving away Caps tickets. You just heard from Nick Dowd coming back in. I've only sent 2 texts to Dowd with a pie emoji this year. I send him a pie emoji every time he scores because he likes pie.
Yep.
And normally like 3 hours after the game, he gets back to me with like a bunch of pies or something.
Yep.
Only 2 this year.
It's been a little strange.
I would like to send him a pie emoji tonight.
He gets those sneaky snipes. Like, he's one of those guys you look up at the end of a couple months, you go, he's got 10 goals.
Right.
Right? Where it's like a couple garbages, a couple ricochet here and there. He gets a deflection, maybe gets a shorty. It's been unusual. I'm with you.
Doubter, I pay for the unlimited text plan.
Doubter, let's send some pies to each other.
Come on, man.
Doubter.
Question for you guys at 800-636-1067. You can tweet us, social media as well.
At Funny Danny for me, at Grant H. Paulson for Grant Paulson.
This Jordan Schultz report is unsettling, that you could have fractions within the building, front office and coaching staff at odds. He's saying that the front office is meddling. Now, he doesn't name anybody. Peters is the general manager. Newmark is the assistant general manager. I don't know how uncommon it would be that a general manager would go, certainly to a head coach, to talk about which guys he wants to see more playing time for, especially when you're terrible, when the season is a disaster, when you're losing constantly, when you've been eliminated from the playoffs. I'd imagine that is a very, very normal thing. Now, according to Jay, we played the audio, for the GM to be at odds with a coordinator is a little more odd because they shouldn't be interacting that much. That's more the head coach's job. So that could be signs of an overstep if that's what Schultz is suggesting. But clearly this is the side of these fired coaches via their agents and their camps getting their word out on what they feel like went wrong. I can't get overly concerned about this for 2 reasons. One, I need to know more about what the meddling was. Like, I need more context on this. What was he upset about?
Yep.
In what way were Peters or whoever, like, rearing their head and overstepping? And then 2, you're talking to a guy who's never had a general manager, who's always wanted a general manager. They now have a general manager.
Who's generally managing.
If the general manager is going to be a pain in the ass when you're getting your teeth kicked in every week, you're going to have to forgive me for not being ready to run him out of town over it. You know what I'm saying?
Precisely, yeah. And so, again, that's what I'm hyper-focused on, the first thing you said. The nature of the meddling, if it's a suggestion in passing, like if we're walking down the hallway getting ready to do the show and TK goes, are you guys talking Mystics today, when, you know, Cliff Kingsbury got fired? And we're like, probably not. And he says something like, why not? I'm like, oh my God, he's meddling in the show. Is he? Or are we just having a conversation? Or is this finger in your face, yelling at you, saying do this or else?
Yeah, meddling would be every time we go to break, he comes in and tells us what he hated about the segment and why what we did was wrong. That's meddling.
Now, but this is coming from the person who's aggrieved. So how bad is the meddling? I don't know. And by the way, again, I'm making this up. If it's a 3.5 out of 10 in terms of meddling, yep, I got gripes. So no problem there.
But this is why it's not a zero story to me. I'm not going to completely dismiss it like nothing happened. First of all, Schultz was the first person to report and to really dive into Terry's acrimony, if you remember.
I do, yes.
He mostly got dismissed and swatted away like Dikembe Mutombo at the rim, and everyone was like, oh, it's Jordan Schultz. Schultz was all over that Terry McLaurin is mad at the team, and the team and him are miles and miles apart this offseason, and he ended up being right. He gets a lot of stuff these days, and he's right a lot of the time because he's talking to a lot of agents. So that's the first thing. But the other reason I'm not going to completely dismiss this is the relationship between the general manager and the head coach is vital. See the Lions or some of these other really successful organizations over the last several years. And the relationship or just the way of operating for the GM in general within the building is maybe the single most important thing non-quarterback. You know, it's just like that role, that and the head coach, you need to have the right guy. You need to have someone who's operating correctly. You can't have someone who's alienating people and running people out of the building over a disagreement if that's what's happening. So like if this is the first crack that there could be something very broken here, that there, you know, could be something rotten here, and this is us like smelling the milk. We open the fridge and we know something's bad. I'm just filing it into a drawer for now. That's what I'm doing. I'm putting it into a drawer of things to circle back to, basically. But I will dismiss outright. I just don't believe this idea that Dan Quinn is a victim who didn't want to fire these coordinators and was made to. That's just not a reality, in my opinion. I don't think a guy who started by firing these coaches, the hourglass on his time as a head coach in this league, did so because the big, bad, mean general manager made him. Not buying that. Let's go to Christian in Leesburg on Grant and Danny. What's up, Christian?
Hey, y'all. How y'all doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Got it, bud.
So I'm going to kind of pivot away from the conversation that we're having a little bit about the coordinators, and I kind of want to zoom out a little bit more. My take is that if you're firing both of your coordinators, what are you beating around the bush on the head coach for? Your coordinators are a reflection of the head coach, if I'm not mistaken. So my thing with DQ is I have nothing against DQ. I think he's a fantastic guy. I think he's a great leader of men. But if that's all that you are as a coach, and there's no, I'd say, play-calling prowess. I mean, DQ wasn't calling plays until the last, what, 5 weeks of the season? He took that from Witt. So I just haven't seen necessarily enough from DQ for him to be protected from the axe the way that he has been.
It's a really smart phone call. So let me take issue with one part of it first. I actually think, unlike Ron Rivera, who I didn't feel this way about at the end of his career, I think Dan Quinn is still an excellent D coordinator. And like if he was a D coordinator, we would talk about him on this market like we're talking about Schwartz and Flores.
His results have been pretty good as a DC.
When he's a DC, he's a top five defense. And you saw it. When he took over play calling duties, they kicked they kicked it up a notch is what I'll
say.
They
were better.
They went from horrendous to like moderate bad. You know, they went from 32 to 19 or whatever, which is kind of where you wanted to be all along with that talent. And so I think he actually is very good as a defensive coordinating play calling type, period. Now, the other part of this, I think he's totally right, Danny. If your OC is out and your DC is out, and by the way, your quarterback's coach is out and your O-line coach is out, and when you hire two new coordinators, most of the staff that Dan Quinn brought in here and has over-talked about how layered it is and how he's got succession plans to succession plans to the succession plan, 90% of these guys are going to be gone. Why is it that because of the NFC Championship game, essentially, he is above reproach? That, you know, there's no conversation to be had about a John Harbaugh, Kevin Stefanski, or whoever. Why wasn't Cliff Kingsbury allotted that same...
The same grace.
Grace.
This is what I hammered yesterday, is it seems like the two, again, handpicked guys, we're forming the staff. This isn't on the fly. It's not someone you inherited. It's not left over from a previous regime. You know, if you let Tavita Pritchard go this year, not that he got a job somewhere else, you go, okay, you gave the guy who's already under contract a chance and it didn't work out. You see it, you don't see eye to eye. Fine, no problem. You could have picked a lot of people, right? You plucked this guy away from another organization. He was about to sign in Las Vegas, and now he's here. You get rid of both guys, it's a reflection on you, right? So the central point that we shouldn't leave, and I heard J.P. Finley say this, and the caller's point, I know you and I have talked about it a bunch, is the hourglass is now turned over, the sand is escaping down to the bottom on Dan Quinn. When you move on from both coordinators like that, it's a, how many of these do you get? My answer's two, by the way. You don't get a third.
I'm going to go one step further than that. What happened yesterday was a nonverbal admittance from Dan Quinn that he screwed up the hiring of the OC and the DC.
Uh-huh.
You can't fire him after 2 years and tell me it was a good hire. You hired Cliff Kingsbury to be Cliff Kingsbury, then you got rid of him for being Cliff Kingsbury.
He's too much Cliff Kingsbury for me.
Bad idea. You know, somewhere along the line, you're saying I screwed up, okay? And then the Joe Witt thing, you gave one of your guys a shot. It didn't work out. He was overmatched. Whatever. But you are 0 for 2 at coordinating hirings. That cycle, by the way, one of the big arguments for Dan Quinn, the best thing about Dan Quinn when you hire him, wait till you see what staff he puts together. And I give him credit. NFC Championship game in year one, pull the audio 365 days ago. I'm screaming about how it's the best staff in the league or whatever. But you fast forward a year.
Clapping like seals about continuity.
If the whole point is that the best thing you get when you hire Grant Paulson is that he's going to outwork everyone around him. He's going to put in the hours. He's going to grind. He's going to take the show seriously. If I'm slap-dicking it all day long and, you know, not being the hard worker, what was the point of hiring me? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
So the idea of Dan Quinn was, wait till you see how good this staff is. The staff that he's now completely having to replace after 2 years.
Yeah, it's pretty much gutted here.
You sure as hell better get these right. You missed on OC the first time. You told us that. That's not my opinion. That's yours. You missed on DC the first time. We can both agree, Dan Quinn and I, on that one. That one's pretty easy for everyone to see. You don't get that luxury again.
Mm-hmm.
800-636-1067. What do you think of the Schultz report here that there was meddling from the front office that became problematic for the dismissed coaches? Also, whose call was it to move on from Kingsbury, do you think? G&D on the Fan, David Aldridge in 20 minutes. We'll talk to David Aldridge of The Athletic about the future of the Commanders coaching staff in 15 minutes at 3. We've got Caps tickets to give away at 4 o'clock on the Beltway Blitz. Jordan Schultz is reporting that there is trouble over in Ashburn, that the front office was meddling with coaches, pretty clearly coming from somebody of the camps of the folks that got dismissed yesterday. Kingsbury, Joe Witt, Bobby Johnson. I still find the Bobby Johnson firing to be the strangest of the three. Not to say that it's
not the biggest headline, but exactly. That's the head scratcher. I'm with you.
Like you, I can be explained why you got rid of Cliff Kingsbury, and it makes sense to me. The Bobby Johnson one is weirder. It's the only position group guy that they fired. You fired both coordinators, and then you very specifically to the O-line, which is one of the strengths of the team. You say, come to my office, and you fire him. I have to imagine either he took Cliff's side, or there was pushback, or something. But why is he the only position coach that got fired? That's very strange.
It is incredibly odd. And you wonder, again, is he the only other person who spoke up? Is it a strong personality thing? Is it, I'm tied to Cliff? I didn't know that those guys were best buddies or something like that, but it's just interesting to me.
And for the record, it doesn't matter that much because he wouldn't have been back anyway because
there's going to be turnover.
Little chance that a coordinator comes in here without running their own offensive line coach through the interview process and getting the job to run their offense. Most of these guys are going to be gone. How they're gone, I guess, doesn't really matter. But I just find it curious and revealing that there was only one non-coordinator blown out, and it was a guy that happened to do, I thought, a pretty good job with his group.
So in other words, like I would, for example, I'm not yelling about anybody in particular, but if the defensive coordinator goes, you don't think Tommy Donatell, the secondary coach, might have a call to an office?
Right.
Like, that makes sense to you, doesn't it? This one, the offensive line performed pretty darn well, we thought. That was one of the ones we kind of scratched our head about because he came from New York where it wasn't particularly good. But if you're going to grade one unit that was positive for this team, that's the one, right?
Also, from the coaching staff standpoint, if you were going to say, who would you give the best grade to this year, Cliff might actually be the answer. Finishing 12th in yards per play with all their injuries. Bobby Johnson, though, might be the answer. High on that
list.
He'd
be mine, yeah.
You know, there are a lot of guys below them on that list in terms of what they were in charge of, and those are the two that got fired. So that part is a little harder to square for me, too. Let's go to Justin, who's on H Street in the city on Grant and Danny. What's up, Justin?
Hey, gentlemen. I think that this is actually a lot worse than we really realize, and there's 2 points I want to hit on. Number one is dysfunction. You guys are dancing around who's to blame. They're all to blame. But an outside voice, an outside coach, anybody that is respected is going to see this organization is in dysfunction from the report you mentioned, from the terrible offseason, from the terrible two drafts that Adam Peters has had, to the firing of the two offensive coordinators. So you have a lame duck head coach. No real good offensive coordinator is going to want to jump in to this ship when the roster lacks talent outside of Jaden Daniels. So that's point one. And then you're firing your coach after next season and you're wasting Jaden Daniels' rookie contract. Point two is a fish rots from the head. While Josh Harris is much better than Dan Schneider, he's still a terrible owner. He started the process for the 76ers. He's done absolutely nothing with the New Jersey Devils. And Adam Peters is objectively bad at his job. The reason is the draft and everything I mentioned, but also Adam Schefter said that Peters didn't even consider drafting Drake May. It was between J.J. McCarthy and Jaden Daniels. So this is all to say the Commanders need to clean house and really consider going after John Harbaugh. And that's why I canceled my season tickets.
Appreciate you, Justin. Thank you for the call. So there is a scale with which you can kind of view this, and that is on a, I'm not ruling most of what you just said out, but like the most negative lens you could possibly look at this thing through scale.
Yeah.
Which I'm not belittling you for or disagreeing with. I'm just saying I could look at a lot of the same things and say, have a very different takeaway. What you're saying is, if I look at this thing with the most cynical take and the most like fearful detractor opinion, like you can see a lot of what you just saw. In other words, on Adam Peters as an example, I don't think he's saying he's categorically bad at his job. I think that's a ridiculous take away from these two seasons when there have been 2 years, and as a GM, 50% of the time he's been in the NFC Championship game. You're talking about Drake May. You don't have to tell me about Drake May. I love Drake May. Loved him coming out. But one of the two seasons your quarterback has had has been one of the great seasons a young quarterback has ever turned in. It looks like they drafted a franchise quarterback where they did. We can haggle over if the draft happened now, who would go one, who would go two, what does that look like? But it looks like they got a franchise quarterback. They have also hit on plenty of things, including having a franchise left tackle come in here in Laremy Tunsil. It's not like every draft pick has been bad. It's, you know, I would stop short of saying two terrible drafts. I disagree with that. Is it possible that at the end of next year or 2 years from now, Mikey Sanristil's regression continues, Brandon Coleman's regression continues, Sinnott's not on the roster? Like, yes. And then those are terrible drafts. But there's another way to look at this where you go, Luke McCaffrey was the best kick returner in the league before his injury and was starting to show something at receiver. You know, maybe there's something there still with Sinnott. Johnny Newton had a game at the end of the year where he
showed
up.
Jordan McGee looks like he can play.
Pretty well. Yeah. I think the truth on a lot of these guys is probably more on the negative than the positive. But my point is, I think it's pretty early to tell me 2 years in, which is way too early to judge drafts in general, let alone one, you know, this past season where we have 17 games or less sample for these guys, that A, that he's had two terrible drafts, and B, he's bad at his job. How quickly we forget they were 12-5 last year.
Yeah, so here's how I view it. I've hammered this point home a million times, and here's a million and one. Year one, they had the fork in the road. They go, should we just go the normal rebuild, get our teeth kicked in for a little while, increase the talent, bring in a bunch of guys, you know, young, but just to grow together, or do we need to actually legitimize this organization and be like a fun place to come play and have the right culture? That's Ertz. That's Wagner. That's, you know, Cleveland Farrell. That's all these vets for short-term deals that try to teach these guys how to win. Well, that works so well, they double down. I get that. This is the offseason. I'm not going to tell you Adam Peters stinks until I see what happens this offseason. If he understands that, and I think he will because he's a pretty smart dude, totally different paradigm. We need to go acquire, get young, get fast, etc. If we do more one-year veteran deals for numbers, okay, then we can have that conversation. But they got here for a reason because the approach worked in year one. If you're mad and thought he stunk now, then you have to go back 2 years and say it then. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. I would also say I am now curious about if everything's going in the right direction, if they've got the right people in the right roles. I think you should be after 5-12. I am now skeptical, right? I am open-minded to the idea that maybe Peters is not the answer, that he's not a rock star. The door is now open for me to the fact that this might not be the group to do all of these things. But that's very different than where he is, where he's basically already decided these guys are all terrible and need to be gone. I'm not there. Certainly not a year after
No.
you kind of stubbed your toe and accidentally got to an NFC Championship game, which has not happened here in about 30 years. David Aldridge of The Athletic, next on Grant and Danny.